So, all the practices that we practice, it's really three main practices. It's meditation, sensing our arms and legs, looking and listening, and inquiry. They really all work in conjunction with each other. They each support the development of each other. Now, for instance, with meditation, one of the things we learn with meditation, as I've said, is we learn to put our attention where we want it to go, not where it gets taken. But we also learn to not get swept away by our emotions, our thoughts, fears, sensations. We get more of a chance to simply observe, let it be the way it is. There's a non-interferingness to a meditation practice. And where that becomes helpful, where it becomes helpful in our inquiry, is if we get really swept up in an emotion or a sensation, there's not a lot of inquiry that can happen, not a lot of understanding that can happen. We're just lost in it. So the meditation supports the part of our inquiry where strong things arise, but we're not completely swept away by it. And inquiry supports meditation by giving us opportunity to delve into some of the things that constantly keep arising during meditation, like what's the point? What's the point in doing this? Never nothing seems to change, or this still hurts. So inquiry allows us to penetrate and open into that particular pattern or thing that keeps arising. And the sensing practice really is where we get our information. We get a little information from our mind, but actually most of the information from our mind is not that important. We know it already. But by being in touch with our bodies, being in touch with our sensate whole mind, as I like to call it, we can get a different kind of information, an information that's immediate, information that's intimate, information that tells us exactly where we are, what's going on here. Yeah, there's some thoughts, but what else? We've got a whole amazing organ of perception that we're walking around in every day that's capable of sensing this and smelling that and feeling openings here and openings here. Like a finely crafted instrument that we haven't really gotten to know how to use fully. Like yesterday, me and Robert, we got here early, and someone was playing a cello down below where we were having a chat. And whoever it was knew how to play it. And it was really very lovely, and it got me to thinking about how really one of the things we're doing here is learning how to play this instrument. We use such a small part of what this is capable of. We don't even know, actually, I don't even know the totality of what this organ of perception, this individual consciousness, is capable of experiencing and knowing. So the practices really have a lot to do with fine-tuning and honing the way we are with ourselves, the way we relate to ourselves, the way we engage ourselves. And when I say ourselves, yes, there's our familiar self that we know, but then there's a whole other range of experience, the mystery of ourselves that we don't know. And we have to learn through our practices how to open into that mystery, how to fine-tune this organ of perception. So each of the practices we do, and we call them practices because none of us have got them down. We're all still working to understand the practices we do, is one way of saying it, and to just continue to refine, to continue to get more subtle. And the truth is, all we can do is start exactly where we are. Some of you probably read the book by Pema Chodron, Buddhist nun, Start Where You Are. We got nowhere else to start from. We could start from where we think we should be, but that's going to be a really hard road. Or we could try and start where someone else is, but so we get to start where we are. We need to find out where we are, and we use this instrument to find out where we are. And where we are is what our experience is. What's happening in this individual location now? That's how we find out where we are. We use our sensate, our feelings, our thoughts, all of that constitutes where we are right now. Brings us into the present. I'm not aware yet, but if you hear of one, let me know, of any spiritual path that advocates being in the past or the future. It's interesting, they're all vastly different in many, many ways, but one thing guaranteed it seems they have in common is they ask us to be here now, in the present moment. And when we start on the path, what that means, being in the present moment, that changes. But we start where we are. So whatever that means to each of you, what does that mean? If you sense right now, if you give yourself a moment, sensing where you are in this present moment, and just notice what your organ of perception is encountering, is aware of. The sensations, feelings, thoughts. See if you can find yourself in this moment. So being where we are gives us a place to move from, a place to inquire into. And the interesting thing is that where we are now is different than it was a few seconds ago. So we're always penetrating the now of our individual consciousness, which is no different than the now of the totality of reality. So what you're experiencing, what you're aware of, is what brings us into the present moment. Our bodies are always in the present. Our minds, I'm afraid, seem to be often anywhere but the present. If you sense your knee is in the present moment. It's not yesterday. It might have a pain from yesterday, but that pain is in the moment. It's now. So you can always rely on coming back to sensing your body, and you'll land in the present, because it's in the present. It's very simple in that way. But there are also certain things that support us being more here, and certain things that don't, and reasons why we don't actually want to be here. We all got here, we've all come here, because we know that there's things in the way of us really being where we are, being ourselves in the moment. So some of the things that might support us being in the present moment, as I said, sensing our body is guaranteed. You can't sense your body from the future or the past. At least I've figured it out. Maybe you can. I shouldn't say you can't. But generally, when we land in our body, it's the now. It supports us being in our present experience, being where we are, if we allow ourselves to be where we are. Don't push ourselves around to be somewhere else. Don't push ourselves to be where we think we should be. Don't try and fit ourselves into some kind of idea or some kind of teaching, but just keep coming back to what's true for me? What's true for me? I don't really care what anyone else says. What's true for me? So a kind of a loyalty to ourselves. We have been loyal to so many other things in our lives than our own truth, our own experience. Being open to the fact that our experience is going to change moment to moment. What it is now, it won't be necessarily 2 seconds from now. The pain that we think is going to devastate us in one moment, interestingly enough, isn't there in another moment. What happens? And then it comes back. And each time we meet it, we have to meet it with the fullness of our purpose and our presence, which is to know it. The difference, in a way, between awareness and presence is the awareness. We can be aware that we've got some pain. Awareness can sometimes feel like there's a distance. Presence, we're close up. We know that pain intimately. We know our foot intimately. I can be aware of my foot. There it is. But if I enter into it with my whole being, something changes. I know it in a different way. So entering into our experience supports us being where we are, supports us being in the now. Ways we avoid our experience, and you are going to get to find out all the different ways that you support your being present and avoid being present. But I'm just giving a few ideas to get the ball rolling. We avoid being present by being distracted out there. You can see when we did the sensing practice and we ended opening our eyes, very hard to stay fully embodied in our arms and our legs. When our eyes, suddenly there's all people and stuff, and there's this tendency to go out. We're very, very well versed in living somewhere out there. Not so well versed in living rootedly in here. The majority of the planet hasn't even examined that. They think they live in here. So we avoid being present by living out there or living for the future, in the future. Caught up in the emotional worries with some idea that if I let my worry take over, that'll fix it. It's an interesting thing, but we tend to do that with worry. We thought, well, if I worry, everything will be okay. But it's true, isn't it? Takes us away, takes us out from really feeling, okay, what? I'm having this experience of worry. What is that? How does it feel in the cells of my body, in my nervous system? Well, yeah, obviously, Rob talked about it last night. Simply rejecting our experience. If we don't like it, we push it away. And the moment we push it away, there we're pushing away some part of ourselves, something that might have had actually a really important message, content. Something that we needed to know about ourselves. We push it away. Now, what we can do is we can become aware of the pushing away. That'll bring us back. If we allow ourselves to feel, oh yeah, I'm pushing it away. What's that feel like? I'm saying no to my experience. That no feels good. We embody the no. So there's always a way back. No matter what the interference is that's happening, if we allow it, if we sense it, if we feel it, we're right back in the now, in the present. I'll get to some questions in a minute. But there's a lot of reasons that we don't want to be in the present. I've got a list of things, because that's, you know, we all think we do. We came here because we want to be in the present. Find my list of things. Yeah, so what's right about not being present? We believe that there's some, consciously we don't think there's anything right about not being present, but maybe there is. We get to stay in the known, familiar, comfortable self. Because when we show up, we're immediately out of the familiar. Because the presence is always dynamic, it's always changing, it's always on the move, it's not static. So, when we avoid being present, we get to stay in the known, familiar sense of self, to stay in control, get to stand these lovely loops that we get into in our mind, our emotional loops. We stay in the idea that if we stay a little bit in the future, we'll be ready for anything that comes that's unexpected. You know that one? It's just, I'm going to live a little bit ahead of myself, so I'm ready. Well, it's a belief that we can't actually plan for the future from the present. The best plans for the future are made when we're rooted in ourselves. Not when we're halfway over there. If we're not present, we get to avoid some of the feelings that we really don't like. We can keep them at a distance. We can think about them or know them as something that's a little distant, a little dull. We can continue behaviors that we've actually grown out of, that we don't really anymore want to do. But if we're not in the present, we're not really the current age we are. We're still working out something from before. So if we get really now, certain things, that habits and things, we realize, actually, I'm done with that. In this moment, that's not something I want to do. But when we live in the past, we repeat these historical things. We might feel that it's easier to be with others if we're not fully rooted in ourselves, but just a little bit over on their lap, sensing where they are, not sensing where we are. So there's a lot of different reasons we actually unconsciously don't want to be, don't want to show up. Scary. It's scary to risk being really here. And there's a whole bunch of history to that. We have to practice being here, practice sensing, practice showing up, and in our inquiries, work on the history, the difficult things in the history that made us leave ourselves. So we do it both, in inquiry and then in the practice of presence. So I've talked a lot about being present, being here. You might notice, as you're sensing, sitting here sensing yourselves, being present, you might begin to notice that there's something else also arriving in the field, in the space. You can listen to my words and get the meaning of them in your mind. But you can also sense them. You can feel the weight and the presence of the words themselves. It actually has an effect on the organ of perception, this instrument. You might notice, all of a sudden start to notice the silence. The stillness. So presence and being present are actually, they're different, but one is a prerequisite for the other. It's hard to know presence if we're not already here, landed in our bodies, in the moment. And all of you have had, I imagine, experiences of what we call presence. It might have happened when you've seen something particularly beautiful, a sunset or a beautiful flower, and you just look at it and it comes alive in front of you. It comes more vibrant. And your whole being gets filled with a sense of beauty and stillness and peace. Or walking down a busy street, and all of a sudden, it's busy, it's noisy, and all of a sudden you're just completely aware of the presence of a kind of pervasive peace. You don't know where it came from. But usually, when something like that happens, what it means is you've landed even more deeply in yourself. More subtle awareness is available. Open to a different dimension, the invisible dimension. Dimension, what we call the dimension of presence. Subtle, requires subtle perception. It's not available to on the physical level, but it feels very physical in many ways. Feels substantial. Feels very alive. It's like the process of getting more and more here, more and more in touch with our individual consciousness, this body of perception that we have, the process of getting more and more refined and intimate with that, we start to see that there are different levels, different dimensions available to us. To know. We pull back our attention from the physical reality that we're so used to, back into sensing, back into investigating the inner of the inner. Reality starts to reveal itself in some very interesting ways. Beautiful ways. Somebody last night mentioned about, the wanting pleasure and not too happy with difficult feelings and things. Somewhere we all know, actually, that there is a deep pleasure in being here. In being true to ourselves. We know it. And we have to traverse the difficult stuff and the shitty stuff and painful stuff. But somewhere we know that that's just content. It's not fundamentally who we are. And we're sensing down below these peripheral ideas about ourselves. Because presence is not a thought, it's not a concept or a self-image. It's not in that realm, in that dimension of things. And it's not an emotion. It's not a feeling. We feel it, but it's not a feeling. Interesting that. And I'm saying this because it sits outside of our usual things that we're used to perceiving. It's subtle, it requires subtlety to perceive it, but the experience of presence actually can feel very, very substantial. In many ways, more physical than physical. Feels, you can experience it like a dense mist if you're someone who sees it. Or sometimes can just feel like, as I said earlier, there's a sort of a peace descending or a stillness descending or a joy arising. But there's a substantiality to it and an aliveness and an openness. And the truth is that this is always here. It is what is, and it is working on us right now. Exposing all the things that block us from knowing it. And the other thing about it, for those of you who would like pleasure, it always feels good. It's true, you know. Sometimes you've thought, well, I'm in a very deep state, but there's something about the state that doesn't feel good, and sometimes you can't tell whether it's presence or not, but if it doesn't feel good, I guarantee it's not presence. It's some deep fundamental emotion, maybe, but presence always feels good. It just does. It's like you feel like you've arrived, you're home, there's nothing to do, nowhere to go, you've landed. And one of the things we do here as we gather like this is we're actually generating, by being present, by working on being present, we're also generating presence. We're imbuing this hall, this space, with our presence each time we have the intention to show up, to arrive here, in ourselves, in our experience. So, we're going to do a different kind of exercise this morning than last night. We're going to do what we call a repeating question. And a repeating question works like this. You get into groups of two, and you sit opposite each other, and one of you is going to ask the other one the same question repeatedly for 10 minutes. And there's going to be three questions. So the first question that you will repeatedly ask each other for 10 minutes is, tell me a way you avoid being present. Tell me a way you avoid being present. Now these questions have been thought out pretty carefully, so please do not change them, you know, to something that works well for you. They seem to be tried and true, so try and keep them the same. I know there's often a temptation to elaborate. Tell me a way you avoid being present. So the way it works, and I'll give the other two questions in a minute, the way it works is Mr. Jones will ask the question and Mrs. Apple will answer. Tell me a way you avoid being present. I don't like being present. Thank you. Tell me a way you avoid being present. I'm not deep enough. I don't really understand the question. Thank you. Tell me a way you avoid being present. Well, I'd rather go to the bar and have a beer. Thank you. Tell me a way you avoid being present. Oh, geez, I'm really tired of this. Thank you. Tell me a way you avoid being present. So Mr. Jones doesn't react, just asks the question in an open, interested way, and then says thank you after each answer, and then asks it again. And then after 10 minutes, you turn it around. And the Mrs. Apple asks Mr. Jones. So that was the first question, 10 minutes each. Tell me a way you avoid being present. Second question, what's right about not being present? What's right about not being present? And what we're looking for here is the unconscious motivations that drive us to stay distracted, to stay outside of ourselves. We may say, well, there's nothing. You've just given a whole talk about why we need to be present. There's nothing right about not being present. Actually, there's a whole set of unconscious reasons why we don't show up. That's what this question's getting to. What's right about not being present? I feel I need to be vigilant to the external world to stay safe. Thank you. What's right about not being present? When I'm in present, I feel pain. I feel some kind of pain in the side of me every time I'm present. Thank you. What's right about not being present? So we're getting to the reasons why we don't want to arrive in ourselves. And the third question, 10 minutes each. Tell me a way you experience being present. Tell me a way you experience being present. I experience the impact of you asking me the question. Thank you. Tell me a way you experience being present. I experience a lot of heat in my body. Thank you. Tell me a way you experience being present. I experience my breath. Thank you. And whatever it is, it might be I experience silence or spaciousness, whatever is here, I feel pain. So when you're present, what's your experience of it? So that exercise is going to take an hour, so each, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. Any questions about the form of the exercise? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Help yourself to the beautiful place. I think you can go pretty much anywhere you like. Just don't go too far because it'd be good to be back here in an hour.
Is it the same couple for every question?
Yeah, you pick a partner.
Same pair.
Yeah. You pick a partner and you'll stay with that partner for all three questions. Now, if you find you're on your own, because we've an odd number, we have to make it into a group of three. And the way you do that is one person asks the next person for, I think it translates as about 6 minutes, and then you just go around in the circle asking each other for 6 minutes. So you all get to ask and you all get to answer each question if you find yourself on your own.
One more. If it happens that the two have the same mother language, can they speak in this language? Because you said the question is very important.
The question is important, and what's important is that you don't change the words or the meaning of the question, but that you'd have to figure out whether your mother language changes it or not. I wouldn't be any help there. Okay, so I leave it to your discretion, but you get the idea to keep the question.
One person is asking half an hour and the other is answering only one question.
No, thank you. Each question, one person asks for 10 minutes, the other person asks for 10 minutes. Second question, one person asks for 10 minutes. Thank you for asking that. So each question you both do before the next question. That's a good idea. So ask the question as I said it in English, and then you can speak in whatever language works for you. Okay, I'll see you back in an hour and 5 minutes.